Hello, and welcome to the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I'm Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Matthew Fry again.
I am Moonboy.
Unfortunately, Mike will not be joining us this week. He had some work obligations come up, so Matt has decided to sit in and help us out with this today. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So, yeah, we've had a two-week break, and a lot's happened since then. Well, I guess by a lot, I mean one chapter pack dropped.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the reason we didn't record last week is because the chapter pack was about to come out.
Yeah.
And there was nothing really new going on except for all the Lannister stuff, and we don't want to deal with that.
I think we'll address that here in this, but also, I mean, I'm still just wondering why the Stark box didn't make more of an impact, you know, with Stark getting all of these cards. I mean, what's going on? Are we just, have we not found the Stark deck yet? Is someone going to, you know, blindside us in a regionals with the Stark deck to rule them all?
As sad as it is to admit, I was listening to Brotherhood Without Manners the other day.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with them. I mean, they're fine.
Just saying it. And one of the guys, I don't know which one, it might have been like their Joe.
Sure.
He said, like, the reason that Stark box hasn't been a big impact is because they're not cheap enough. Like, they're too rules friendly. They're too fair. Everything that they're going to do is mostly on the board. So you can't trick your opponent. You can't be a dick to your opponent. And he's like, you know, with Lannister and Baratheon out there, with all their little tricks and ways to fuck over their opponent, Stark just doesn't have that. And that's why they're not great right
and
now.
And it is really thematic, you know, I mean, yeah. In a lot of ways.
Well, cards on the table.
Yeah. Where they should be.
I don't necessarily think that's true. Their tricks come from just manipulation of challenges now. I think probably what a large part of it is just people not wanting to stray away from the good stuff. Like, I will admit, Lannister is probably still better than Stark. I can beat my fair share of people, but even the deck I laid out was not a simple deck to play.
Well, I think it's more along the lines of, like, I think Lannister has a good matchup against just about everyone. Whereas there's definitely factions that can beat them, but they might have a weak matchup against another prominent faction.
Sure.
So, like, Lannister is just kind of like, I mean, people have said it before, they're just the good stuff faction.
Yeah, for right now.
Yeah, for now, they're just, you know, if you want a good, consistent deck, you run Lannister. Just because they just have good cards. They're not really all that thematic, or there's not really a something that ties them all together. It's just they're good cards.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that happens in any card game. Yeah.
I hate to say it. But the current Lannister deck is really making me miss influence.
Oh, yeah.
Just some other resource besides money to rule the game.
Sure, sure. I mean, and they're trying to turn reserve into that, and I don't think it's really going to do anything.
No, I mean, they're doing their best with reserve, but, I mean, I can count on my hands how many times I've, like, been really hit hard by reserve.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't happen often enough.
Sure. And, I mean, for people who aren't familiar with Influence, it was a 1.0. Resource that was there that fueled certain cards. Events in 1.0 didn't cost gold at all, and so for the stronger events, they would require influence, and there were a number of ways of getting influence. Some characters would have it on it, and you would kneel it like you would a reducer. There was a agenda called Knights of the Hollow Hill that basically said, you don't get set up, but your plot card gains this, and it was +2 gold, +2 initiative, and +2 influence.
I think that the way the game's set up right now, whoever has the best economy wins a lot, and Lannister just has the best economy.
Sure.
Before in marshalling, and then again in challenges because of Tyrion.
It's funny because they don't even really have all that dominant of economy in the marshalling phase. It's really Tywin. It's all Tyrion. 99% Tyrion is the problem with Lannister.
He's the MVP because he fuels their events.
He fuels
but
everything.
I just don't really think he's... I mean, with all the discussions going on, I really just don't feel that Lannister is as overpowered as people are giving them credit for.
Well, like I said, I don't think that they're overwhelmingly overpowered. I just think that they're consistent.
Yeah.
They're a good call in any scenario.
I agree. Yeah, there's nothing wrong
with that. That's why they're so dominant.
I don't necessarily think they are overpowered, but there is no arguing that they are the best banner.
Like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, you get Tyrion. I mean, you get the best character in the game.
Now, see, I don't know if I agree with the best banner. I think there's, especially with the last chapter pack that came out with Iron Mines, I think making Greyjoy a much more attractive banner. I mean, before they were already good. You got stealth out of them. You know, you've got land destruction with newly made.
I'm not talking about just, like, bannering them into another class.
It means this house.
I see. Okay, as a faction. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But,
well,
you know.
But since you bring it up, I mean, Banner of the Kraken, I think that's going to be really strong. I mean, granted, it was already really strong,
yes.
Right? I mean,
Asha, Theon, Wendemere, newly made lord, I mean.
Lannister Kraken kind of dominated several regionals in a row. It is, again, those Brotherhood Without Manners guys. They kind of built that Lanny Kraken deck to abuse the First Snow of Winter as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked.
And it's a really fun deck to play. I mean, I played with it and, you know, tried it out for a couple weeks and... It is, it's definitely, it gives you room for error, but there is another thing. I mean, your board can be wiped so easily with a heavy aggro deck. And if you don't get started early enough, I've been run ramshot over by Stark, essentially. Stark is one of the big ones. Martell had a lot of issues with Martell. Well, I mean, not a lot of issues, but it had some issues with Martell.
Well, the interesting thing about Martell is they kind of counter a lot of the big decks right now.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have a lot of power icons.
Yeah.
You know, and that's Martell, I think, is a really good counter, as you know, you and I were talking about earlier, to Lannister right now.
Yeah. I mean, Condemned, if you get one Condemned on Tywin or Tyrion,
yeah,
they might, if they're doing Lord of the Crossing, they might not even be able to get all three of their challenges off.
Yeah.
All depending on the circumstances, but...
And I've been stuck in Lannister Mirror Match. Well, not necessarily Mirror Match, but playing my Lords of the Crossing against someone playing Lannister Sun. And the Condemned was what made their game. They were able to initiate more power challenges than me.
Yeah.
And that essentially won them the game.
And as we said a couple weeks ago, power challenges are kind of the point.
Yeah. I remember when Condemned first came out, we were all, before we went to that big tournament, we were building, I was building Greyjoy, Martell, and people were trying to talk me out of playing Condemned in the deck because they said it wasn't good enough.
And, you know, we were wrong.
Yep.
But in that same tournament, a lot of us were running Lanny Martell and running Condemned. So I don't know how much room we really had to talk about that one.
Yeah, I mean, Condemned was one of those cards that was rated poorly, including by me. I remember I gave like either a 2 or a 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were just comparing it to a Tainted, and they're saying like, oh, a Tainted removes intrigue icons so you can tierce people. What's removing a power icon going to do? It's like, well, it's going to make you win power challenges.
Especially, and looking at Lannister, they don't have that many in the way of like good characters with power icons.
Yeah.
You know, their 6 cost doesn't have a power icon, and that can be a big deal, you know, when you can't bring strength to a power challenge, because as we said a couple weeks ago, the point of the game is to get 15 power. If you can't do a power challenge, like, what's the point? And then, I mean, we look at some of the other houses, and this is another thing that we were discussing. Like, you know, I think Lannister is going to have their day in the sun, and they're going to be done pretty soon. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. But then one deck that really hasn't changed since the core set that I'm having some issues with, Baratheon. Now, Baratheon, it's just, don't get me wrong, Gendry's great. Motley is great. Stinking Drunk, sure, why not?
It's more Neil.
You know, even Tobo Mott's Armory, I personally don't run. I think I run a one of it.
I think, it's a one of.
Yeah, it's there. You know, that's great. More card draw. But honestly, they're still the same thing. And Danny, I think you had...
Moonboy.
Oh, yeah, Moonboy. Oh, yeah.
Moonboy.
Insight. Yeah, he's in my deck. I love him.
No, he's saying call him Moonboy.
I said my name was Moonboy.
That's right. You are Moonboy.
He introduced himself as Moonboy
my
for
apologies.
Some fucking reason.
Moonboy. Like, what do you think about this whole thing with Baratheon right now?
I mean,
you play it more than any of us.
Yeah, Baratheon was the deck I started out with because they were so strong out of the core box.
The one
he
tormented
really
me
quick.
With for months.
Yeah, I have forever traumatized my brother Joe with Baratheon so that no matter what the state of the game is, he feels that Baratheon is better than Lannister or on point with Lannister,
which I don't
agree with. I really like the faction. And I'm kind of sad that they haven't gotten to, like, branch out as much as any other faction does. For the last 5 chapter packs and core set, all we really have gotten are events and locations. We've gotten 3 new characters, Gendry, Renly, and Moonboy.
No, and the knight that kneels when you lose an intrigue challenge.
Oh, yeah, thank God for that,
Joel.
Because, I mean, Baratheon will always win intrigue challenges. There's just no way to get through an intrigue challenge through on them. So, 4 characters. And then the rest have been locations and events, all of which are good, not great, sometimes terrible.
Well, I mean...
And sometimes good. I mean, but the problem with, like, just giving us nothing about locations and attachments is that you've got, like, maybe 28 slots for locations and attachments. And a lot of them are already filled up with stuff that came in the core set. Like, you still need your economy. You can't just cut all of your Rose Roads and King's Roads so you can run the Kingswood.
Oh, dude, Kingswood's so broken. OP as fuck,
God,
dude.
It's like the
worst
card I've ever seen.
I imagine you're joking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't found a use for it yet. I wanted to bring it into a burn deck. I'm like, wait, it can't work.
I think it's a win more deck. It's a win more card just because, like, you lose one power. If you lose one power challenge, they're gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you're just, like, smashing your opponent over the face with power challenges every single round, what good is it? And if you're doing that, why do you need it?
Exactly. Like, you know, with Danny's minus one strength and with Blood of the Dragons minus one strength, it leads you towards burning that character out. What does minus one strength and a power challenge against you actually do? And that's something, like, you know, that's just cutting the challenge math a little, like, you know, preemptively. And I just think it's kind of silly overall.
Yeah.
Sure, your characters will have more, but I mean, what am I going to take out for that?
Yeah, I mean,
that's
someone,
not already in there. I mean,
someone's going to build a Red Keep, Kingswood, you know, never lose a power challenge ever, and that's the only challenge I ever initiate deck.
But they already have it. All they in the name of your king.
You
so
see
no,
the Red Keep, and you get plus two to all the challenges.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you have in the name of your king, which is obviously being run to fight against aggro quite a bit. And so, you know, I mean, why? I just don't see the reason for Kingswood. Maybe I'm not on the design team, so I'm not saying, you know, they done fucked up on Kingswood, but they done fucked up on Kingswood.
I'm not grateful for some of the cards they printed. Like, a lot of them have been really good. like the king, name of the king. Yeah. I was like so on it at first, but since I'm getting pushed into a defensive do nothing deck, it's really powerful. So like, I don't get to give a military challenge. Shucks.
Unless
I wasn't gonna do one anyway.
If you're going second, I mean, then you get to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
And that's
well, you mean going first? I do the military.
Oh yeah, sorry, first.
Because that's
sorry.
Exactly what I want to do all the time.
I know, right? and that's the thing. I mean, they. From what they were in the beginning, they were lockdown. And that there was something fun about that. There was a...
Well, for the person playing
fun.
Baratheon.
Did you... Fun?
It was fun. It was definitely fun.
But they haven't really gotten anything to add to the lockdown, at least nothing affordable. I mean, they got Even-Handed Justice, but having a two-cost, non-unique plot...
Non-loyal, you mean?
Or non-loyal, yeah, sorry. Out of a deck that hasn't gotten any help to its economy at all, it's just really a lot to ask at times.
And it is a really hands-off approach now because, I mean, then the other way of going around it is Stinking Drunk. And it's like it's at zero cost attachment.
I mean, I would much rather run Stinking Drunk than Even-Handed Justice.
Sure. And, I mean, I think they both have their places. Like, for me, I'm running a Bear Lion deck right now. And so Even-Handed Justice.
Why not? You just throw a lion and everything.
Yeah, lion is everywhere.
Well, no, and it helps fuel.
Need gold, lion.
Once you get to that two-cost for event thing. Yeah, you throw Tyrion in. It's a strong deck, you know? Why not take the best of both
this
worlds?
Just goes back to the whole Tyrion solves everybody's problems
and,
thing.
Yeah, and but then at the same time, bringing Tyrion into the deck means that you're not bringing other things into the deck. You're not bringing Greyjoy's stealth. You're not bringing Martell's control aspects.
Except
and that's,
you are bringing stealth because Tyrion is stealth.
You're bringing one stealth, but I mean, you know, with Greyjoy, you're bringing... Three stealth characters,
but you're
plus
getting
a save.
You're getting into the conversation of opportunity cost.
Sure,
which you know that's all great. I mean, you could write an entire article or entire book about opportunity cost. But,
sure.
When it comes to just like you want to put the best cards in your deck, and Tyrion's the best card.
See, I don't know if I agree with that, and I think that's a good segue into like what fights Lannister right now. Like you know, and I think there's plenty that hurts Lannister and keeps Lannister from. Controlling the board.
Well, I wanna throw one out there, and maybe you guys will disagree with me, but
okay.
Night's Watch.
I actually don't disagree, and the reason I don't disagree is because it doesn't matter what Lannister fields. There's always threat on Night's Watch side, with what is it?
The Watcher on the Walls.
The Watcher on the Walls.
I mean, you have a faction. Okay, so. I took Night's Watch PLT to the regionals in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I didn't do great. I lost a lot of close games, but I didn't do great.
Yeah.
I put three Watcher on the Walls in my deck because in testing I was triggering it like crazy and just murdering all kinds of people.
Sure.
But during the tournament, I didn't really trigger it. I think I triggered it one time.
Yeah.
So that was a huge mistake on my part to, you know, I trusted my playtesting a little bit too much. But it's still... the one time I did trigger it was against Lannister,
mm-hmm.
because Lannister has the mountain. Yeah. And they want to do the mountain.
Otherwise, he's the world's biggest Iron Throne. You know, yeah. He's not doing a challenge.
Well, yeah, if he's not doing a challenge, but, you know, and they have Jaime. So Jaime plus the mountain, they want to do a military challenge every single time.
Yeah.
So when you have two Rangers and your fealty or one gold, they can't do that. Or they don't want to do that. Or they can potentially ruin their entire board state.
Yeah, exactly.
In testing, I've had games where I've wiped 6 or 7 renown off the board with a Watcher on the Walls.
Nice.
So I even did it to you during our tournament two weeks ago.
I hadn't played against Knights. It actually made me start playing against a lot more Knights Watch players. I hadn't played against Knights Watch in forever because, to be perfectly frank, I didn't take them seriously. And then in our first game, you know...
Well, in our first game, you got everything.
I got every piece I needed. And then the second game, I always had a hand's judgment. Yeah. And I had at least one gold in hand, so I wasn't worried about it. My second game, you're right, I was sitting there with the mountain and Jaime. I'm like, I need to get power because I don't have power icons on the board. So renown is my only power. And I did the Jaime, and it was just a crapshoot. I'm like, you know, I hope he doesn't have it. I hope he doesn't have it. And when you asked me, like, you know, so do you have the hand's judgment? Even though I had the one, I'm like, nope. No one gold. So, bye, Jaime.
So that's part one of why I think Night's Watch is good against them.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Part two, I think the Shadow Tower is really good against Lord of the Crossing in particular.
Can you remind me what the Shadow Tower does again?
I don't have it in front of me, but the Shadow Tower, after you win a challenge on defense, target, you know, pick a character. That character cannot initiate a challenge against you this round.
That's right.
So, you know, this is more of a Lord of the Crossing counter in general, but it covers Lannister because that's the most popular Lannister deck right now.
Sure.
Is, you know, they'll have to do 3 challenges against you.
Yes.
And their first one, they don't really want to do Tywin because it would make him weaker.
Yep.
And you could possibly lose that challenge. And why would you want to lose a challenge with Tywin? So they might want to do a burn man military challenge, or, you know, a brothel madam intrigue challenge, just something to get their challenge out of the way. But with Shadow Tower sitting on the board, they can't. And that happened in our game as well.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I didn't realize you had 2 practice swords in your hand that you were gonna ambush in.
Yeah.
Like, I had my challenge math down, and then, you know, with practice sword coming out there, you know, plus the 1 strength on the wall, you know, I mean, I got screwed. I mean, frankly, I didn't do my challenge math right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what was really beautiful about it. Like, and one thing, Watcher on the Walls is a loyal event. If their house card is standing, remember, they could use
against
that.
Against
fealty.
Which I run fealty.
Yeah, and because that's what got me. I just remember that. That's what got me. I saw you didn't have gold.
Yeah.
So I didn't even think about it being loyal.
Yeah.
I always kind of chuckle when I think of Watchers on the Wall now because of the game we played at the store champion, the little spring thing we did, where I was playing Do Nothing Baratheon, so he had like Master Aegon out, so I'm like, I'm never initiating another military challenge against him ever again now. And then he was like, God damn it, and then he wins, the game's over, and he just flops his hand down on the table. He has like 2 Watchers on the Wall.
He's like, this card is worthless against Baratheon.
Why can't you attack me?
Watch card is worthless against Baratheon.
Yeah,
but anyway, so that's step 2 is Shadow Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of to tie into that, you also have For the Watch, Sword in the Darkness, and Old Bear Mormont. So
I have a quick question about Sword in the Darkness. You found it to be useful in the current generation of Night's Watch decks?
Yes.
How many do you run in your deck?
I want to run 2, but I often fall down to 1.
Okay, so I mean, it's there just in case.
It's there just in case. I would really love to fit in 1 more, but it just isn't in the cards right now.
Sure.
So I think I run... yeah. I run 1. I want to run 2. So you have that. So same situation as Lord of the Crossing. They do a short military challenge. You have Old Bear, and he doesn't even kneel to defend.
Sure.
So you're just like, oh, I'll have Old Bear and then Sword in the Darkness. Or, you know, For the Watch, they automatically lose the first challenge. They don't want to commit anything to it, but they have to because of Shadow Tower and Sword in the Darkness.
Yep.
So they have all these things that are stopping you from doing challenges or potentially stopping you from doing challenges. And then I don't have to initiate challenges, so losing challenges isn't a big deal for me.
That's true.
Winning challenges on offense isn't a huge deal for me. I can still collect 2 power. And with the Long Claw and Old Bear, I can collect some power pretty quickly when I need to.
Very much so.
So I think that Night's Watch is a surprisingly good counter to Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take. You guys can go from there.
Actually, I don't disagree with that. You know what I want to see for Night's Watch? I want to see a zero-cost attachment called Black Cloak. Attach character gains the ranger trait.
I would love that.
Like, that's
I would love... I think that the practice plate should have given the ranger trait.
it's just a blade.
It's just a practice blade.
But you need a cloak, man. That's what makes you.
I'm just saying, like, it would have been nice if the sword, because in 1.0, what is it called? Counterattack or whatever.
Lethal counterattack.
Lethal counterattack was just two Stark characters.
Yeah,
which is way easier to trigger than two Rangers.
Oh yeah, trust me, it sucked to play against.
So I mean, I would have liked to get a little bit easier to trigger it, because that's one of its biggest weaknesses. Is like, you know, the best way to do it is to have two Rangers, one of which is like the little small guy,
sure,
the old forest hunter, but he's often your claim. I mean, if you're defending with the military with him, you want to claim him unless you have Maester Aemon out.
Sure,
so
sure,
it's tough.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think giving them more range. I think giving them the ability to have more Rangers out there, like an attachment that would do that. Well, then even with that, if it only gives the Ranger trait, what are you going to take out for it?
Oh, maybe plus one strength and Ranger trait.
Make it cost one gold, you know.
Yeah, but
with ambush,
but then it'd have to be a weapon.
Like, because maybe they were stashing their cloak in like a hollow of a tree.
Ooh. Yeah, but they need to make it a weapon, otherwise you couldn't attach it to any of them anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot.
You can attach it to a few of them.
But most of the characters that say nothing but weapon are already Rangers.
Yeah, but the builders. I mean, veteran builder, halter.
Well, they're builders, so you can't be a Ranger and a builder at the same time.
That
the
is true.
Unsworn apprentice.
Yeah, he's unsworn.
Smart.
He doesn't
he's
know
unsworn.
If he wants to be.
You gotta swear him.
Yeah.
Ugh, you guys annoy me. But anyway, that was my thought.
Sure.
I'm sure a lot of people won't even take it seriously, because Night's Watch is still, like I said, I was listening to Brotherhood Without Manners, and they were super rude to Night's Watch, which kind of makes sense for their whole, you know, thing of being assholes. But
I mean, like, when it comes to Night's Watch, I think they are missing just a few more cards. But, you know, I mean, you've played Night's Watch so much, and I think you've done as well as you can with Night's Watch at this point. And yeah,
valiant effort, Joe.
It is.
Congratulations.
No, if I had a little star sticker, I would totally give it to you. But I think exactly, it'd be scratch and sniff. By the way, but, man, how long has it been since I got a scratch and sniff sticker? But anyway, I think the card that was spoiled, the new location that we don't know the cost of yet, that basically acts as meager contributions. The location
that is a Stark
for
card.
The Stark.
Oh, that's a nice Stark.
That
yeah,
no, that is a Stark card.
I am 99% sure it's Night's Watch.
I am 100% sure it is a Stark card.
Really?
Yeah, it's a tree. It's an old tree. It's an old god tree.
And it has the Night's Watch.
No, it doesn't.
You know,
oh, I was under the impression it was a Stark card.
I am like 90% certain that is a Stark
card.
Oh,
we lost 10%.
Fine.
Where'd that 10% go, Matt?
So I guess this teaches us we should do our research before bringing up the
I am
card.
Pretty.
Oh well, it's a partial spoiler, so you don't even you
oh,
can't
yeah,
even
we
see
don't know
the.
You can
cost.
See you can see the you can see the raven in the background of the text box, right?
No, you can see that it's a white text box, which is Stark.
That's we're looking, but yeah. So while we're doing that,
this is
anyway.
Not great use
so
of
no,
podcast
no, no.
Time.
Now it's a choose your own adventure. So in one universe where it is a Night's Watch card, that would be great because it's extra econ.
Finally,
in another universe where it's a Stark card. Boo.
Yeah, like Stark doesn't benefit from it other than denying the economy because most of the time they want to go first.
Yeah.
And it is much less good going first than it is going second.
So,
obviously.
Joe, in this Choose Your Own Adventure, which path do you pick?
Night's Watch.
Night's Watch. Unfortunately, that
one
is a
Night
Watch card.
Oh, it is a Night Watch
card. High five, Joe.
You can kind of see it. It's like.
Hey, Matt.
I didn't realize
that 10%
that Stark
gotcha,
cards and Night Watch cards are exactly the same fucking color.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If they put it right next to a Stark card, so I just assumed they were both Stark. But if you look closely, you do see like the little raven.
Oh, yeah,
so,
you can
and
see
Joe,
the raven.
Joe is correct.
You chose correctly. You come upon a hallway
it does.
With a chapter pack on the floor.
That makes
you,
it significantly
better. It's a good thing you downgraded that 10%.
It is.
Because it would have made you look foolish if you said that.
I kind of told him it was a Stark card. I was the one that looked at it and described it to him.
Well, then Danny's the idiot here.
I mean, if you look at it, it's literally the same color scheme as the blatant Stark card sitting next to it. So.
Yeah, it looks similar. But it's all about the raven in the background.
Yeah, legitimately, the only reason you could possibly know that is a Night's Watch card.
Very faded watermark.
Yeah.
The raven watermark, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's. Okay.
Yeah.
I can completely see.
I made a couple of leaps based on coloration and the tree.
I would have probably done the same thing had I not listened to the podcast and heard that it was a Night's Watch card.
Yeah, you can't actually see the name of the card either.
No.
So if it was like
people were just calling it the white tree.
But I mean, now with Night's Watch, so going back, so Joe chose correctly.
Yeah, it's a much better card now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
And so now we finally
It costs like five.
Well, I mean, I think they have to cost it at two.
It should be two. They'll probably make it three, but it should be to.
Seven.
It's a seven. You make the money back in seven turns.
Oh, man. What would a seven cost location be?
Play it, win the game.
Yeah. Yo, it'd be eight turns.
You're right. It would be eight turns. Unless you play it on the turn where you're going first and you can.
Because Night's Watch always goes first.
And then you can't use it. So it's still not making your money back. Okay. And you chose to go first.
Or you've been forced to go first.
Yeah.
We've gone down this path a little too far.
Well, no, but I think, okay, so going back on track with it, I think that card actually really helps Night's Watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it'll help. The only concern is like, I already have six economy locations with the Rose Roads and the King's Roads. And then I have three walls, obviously.
Yeah.
And I want to have two Castle Blacks. And then I'd like to have two Shadow Towers because they're all fantastic locations. Where am I going to fit this other location?
Well, check.
I mean, how many locations am I going
to
put in this deck?
I mean, it might be a Greyjoy.
The Baratheon deck.
Yeah. So, well, check this out. So, Matt, remind me, Winterfell Heart Tree, the one that cancels the effects of a plot on a character, blah, blah, blah. Is that a unique card?
Do you say it's a unique card? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay. Because what I was thinking of, if it was a Heart Tree and that one, the Night's Watch, that was non-unique and would pave the way for Night's Watch Choke,
yeah.
I think that would be really neat, you know, have multiple of them out there.
Yep.
And at that point, I could see them be three cost if
that
it's non-unique.
That is my phone ringing.
Can't tell if it's unique or non-unique because you can't see the name.
Unfortunately. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, based purely on conjecture, I think that card could conceivably bring a lot of power to Night's Watch at that
point. It could make them where they should have been in core set, I think.
Well, you know, with a reducer of some, or an extra econ card, you know. And I think as we move forward, I think Night's Watch defense is going to be a thing. And I think your assessment of them being a good counter to Lannister, you know, I mean, who among us here has played Night's Watch against Lannister the most? I don't think we can really disagree with you on that one.
Yeah. I actually agree with him, too. I've said it more than once. I actually think that people rag on Night's Watch a little bit too much.
It's just fun to rag on.
No, I think I'm fun to rag
on. Well, that too.
Yeah.
I just think people haven't given them a fair shot. I will admit that they are probably the worst, but...
people haven't given them a fair shot. They're the worst.
There's a difference between being the worst and just being actual bad. Like, I think you still have a shot, even though they're at the bottom of the list. Somebody has to be at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's just the natural way of things. Okay. But, like, they're not so far below that they can't win.
Yeah, that's true. That is very
true. So if you were to build a counter Lannister deck right now, what would it be, Matt?
I actually think that Stark has pretty good game against
Lannister.
I'm
starting to see a pattern.
Yes. It's not surprising, but in the tournament I played just like my Wolf Murder deck against...
not the one that we built on the podcast,
no,
right?
No, not that. I played my fun Murder deck, and I played against one Lannister Sun deck, and they got double Tyrion, double Tywin, double Nymeria, and I still almost beat him.
Oh, is that Scow?
Yeah. And if I'd been playing just like the Stark deck that I built, I have no doubt in my mind that I would have won, even though he got that start.
Yeah.
Like, that was by end of turn one, he had all three of them duped.
Oh, geez.
Really?
Yeah, at that point, I mean, that's just...
No, I almost beat him.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I mean, there's such a thing as an all-world start.
Oh, that was
I
second
think...
round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I saw that game. Yeah, you were actually really close to beating him.
Yeah.
I mean, Lannister, I think, has the most potential to win on turn one, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, they get the best setup.
Yeah, they get they have the best setup potential with Tywin, Reducer, Rose Road, and then by then it's just,
Which is one of the few instances where I'm okay with a 7-1-0.
Yeah.
And because other than that, I'd rather be able to cycle through my hand more. But don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining, like, if I get a 7-1-0. But with Tywin, like you're saying, it's two extra gold, why the hell not?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So that setup plus, like, you know, the Mountain or Tyrion or Jaime, something like that, you can definitely win. You can essentially win a game on turn one with Lannister. I don't think that's really possible with any other faction, but...
Stark. If Stark gets there, because the thing about it is basically what Stark starts with between setup and round one, in my opinion, determines the course of the game. And if Stark gets a good setup and a good round one, I have yet to see it lose.
Yeah, they've got really good tempo.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons.
And
they can
not only make trades, they can blank, they can increase claim, they can control the board. I mean, it's like Stark, I think, is the one of the other houses that they have. I think any house needs to really start well in order to win. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think even Night's Watch You know, like, you want to get your wall out as early as possible. You want to make sure you have characters to back it up. Tyrell, I just don't even know. I haven't figured them out yet.
Tyrell, I've heard that they're good. I've not seen it yet.
That's what I'm... since this is a podcast, people can't see it, but I'm actually building while we're talking.
You always are.
And, yeah, I always am. So I've got my cards in front of me just building stuff, and I'm actually working on Tyrell right now. And then... there was a deck that I played against with one of the people from the White Book, Luke, and you know, it's pretty good. I like it so far. I'm doing my own variation on it, but anyway, so I guess I'll try and figure out Tyrell tonight.
Oh wait, are you doing like a variation of that two men one deck thing that they posted?
I have no idea. I didn't.
They did a Martell Tyrell deck and.
Okay. So
today.
Is that you? What you would play as a counter Lannister deck, Tyrell something?
I think right now the houses that I'm most comfortable with against Lannister are Greyjoy and Baratheon. And the reason I choose those two is because I'm most comfortable with those houses right now. And it's not to say that there aren't other houses that can do very well against Lannister. It's just that's what I play. That's what I know.
Yeah. I mean, I've played a couple of games of Baratheon against Lannister. Maybe I'm just building it wrong, but it's like an absolute shit kick most of the time.
Sure. Well, I mean, we can always, because like I run mine against Lannister all the time because, you know, it's, Amanda, my girlfriend, just got into Lannister Kraken and like really loves it.
Why did you let her do that?
Because I wanted her to. I wanted her.
We probably should have preface this. Anything that is Lannister to counter Lannister, I don't consider.
Yeah, I don't consider that.
I'm saying I'm playing my Baratheon deck against Lanny Kraken. Okay. And we're learning it. So at first, you know, of course I was winning because she wasn't familiar with the deck. And then the swing happened and she started winning. And then now we've kind of gone into this like end phase where I'm winning half the time, she's winning half the time. But what it's giving me, even if it's with someone who's not familiar with the deck, is constant practice against the cards and how they come out with a mixture of good decisions and not so good decisions in there. And the things that, you know, the curveballs that you get thrown throughout the game. And I think it's perfectly fine against it. You know, that was actually one of the things that convinced me.
I think I just have bad luck then. I always get like, here's my setup, here's my first turn, Lannister attacks in, here's my put to the sword and my tears, take a claim, pull the best card out of your hand.
Sure.
I'm like, okay, that's a good game.
That's how it feels for everyone, though. I think everyone always remembers the worst experience against any deck that they play against.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's really hard playing defensively against Lannister because if you just give them a chance to build up, then they have nothing to spend money on, so they can just torture you with it. And then, it's not like Nightwatch, where if I play defensively, I have a way to counter punish my opponent when he comes into me. I just have to sit there and like take everything they throw at me. And hope I still have all of my dudes on the table that collect power and I get to 15 beforehand.
I think as more and more packs, I mean, especially like Calm River Westeros and things like that come out, the dominance of Lannister is easily getting there. And honestly, there are decks out there that can beat Lannister. But once again, it's hard to see it because what we're looking at when Joe and you were saying the last regionals, the last store championships and things like that. And in those cases, there's a lot of factors that lead into that. It's not only skill of the player, it's luck of who you're paired up against.
Oh, yeah.
And there are bad matchups for every house right now. Oh. I think Lannister has the least amount of bad matchups and can consistently get a strong board presence, but by no means do I think they're
unstoppable. And that's what I was saying is, you know, Lannister just is the most consistent. They have they have a good matchup against basically every faction. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, when I was saying, Night's Watch is a good counter, it's not necessarily means that taking Night's Watch to a tournament means you're going to do well because, I mean, as you saw with me, I mean, I did well against Lannister when I played them in the regionals, but against other factions, I didn't really play all that well. Mainly because it's like, okay, I have a good matchup against Lannister, and then I have a bad matchup against, you know, Baratheon. So if I hit more Lannisters than I do Baratheons, I'll have a good day. If I hit more Baratheons than I do Lannisters, I'll have a bad day.
Exactly.
Lannister doesn't really have that. They're just kind of like, whatever I see, I have a 60% to 70% chance of beating them.
Sure.
So,
I still think if I was building an anti-Lannister deck, it would be something Martell with a lot of icon stripping.
Yeah,
Martell's definitely, I think, the key.
It definitely kills the crossing pretty easily. But And I don't know about
Condemned.
All the other stuff.
Condemned is so strong against Lannister.
Yeah.
And, like, if you look at it, I mean, their sixth cost doesn't have a power icon. Like, take out Tyrion or Tywin, even Cersei. Or keep Cersei.
I mean, that's really their three. They have four power icons, really. Yeah. I mean, the Hound, Cersei, Tyrion, and Tywin.
The last time I played it in the tournament, I didn't fit in Milks, and I kind of wish I had. I felt like you get one confiscation. What do you want to get rid of? Is and kind of like
most
the
Lannisters
best way to play.
Most don't even run confiscation.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know that.
It made me start running two Milks, like, in my Baratheon deck. Like, why not?
Yeah.
It helps. There's a lot of characters I want to milk, Nymeria being one of the big ones.
Yeah, I've never stopped running confiscation, and I see it fall out of every other deck. I'm like, what the shit, dudes?
Yeah, well, because it's not even just for milk. I mean, you've got a seal in the hand. Yes, I would love to get rid of that.
Yeah, are you not playing milks against me? Fine, I'll just get rid of all your good attachments.
Exactly. Oh, wait, what's that Nymeria on your character? Confiscated. Yeah. Which would be a very awkward, you know, situation to find yourself in. Confiscating Nymeria, like, if you're actually there. That would just be dangerous, you know? Like, you wouldn't want to touch that thing. It'd be all snappy, and it's a dire wolf.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
It would be, definitely. But it's, that's another
I always get really confused when people say Nymeria, because there's two
characters. He's talking about the wolf.
Yeah, there's two characters in the game that have that name now.
One's Nymeria, one's Nymeria Sand.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, no one actually uses full names. I remember I had a conversation with Matt for, like, 5 minutes where he was talking about Nymeria, and it took me an entire 5 minutes to figure out he was talking about the wolf and not the Martell
character.
Matt,
so he's talking about the Stark Guard.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Nymeria, the character, is probably the best anti-Stark card in the game.
Yeah, like, I think she's the best anti a lot of stuff in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, legitimately, when I play against almost anything, if they drop a Nymeria and are able to protect her, it ruins my day. So
but with all the stuff where you just pop people into challenges, I figured that it wouldn't be as bad.
Well, it's not infinite, Joe.
He's really
sure?
just got the.
It's only. It's
he's
only
really
one
just
plot.
Got the plot. Yeah. You can't. The
well,
kennel
the
masters
kennel
have
masters.
Dropped out.
No,
yeah,
they're one strength.
The
they're
kennel
just,
masters
they
dropped
don't stick.
Out because they're one strength, which is a detriment against Targaryen. And they're two cost, which is a detriment against First Snow Winter, which is a lot of people playing. Like, I still run a pretty high like number of ones and two drops. I don't want them to be put back. Like, if they're put back in my hand, I'm probably discarding them because I have relatively low reserves. Mm-hmm. And although they are fantastic, they are bad by themselves. So, like, I can't discard the wolves because then they're worthless. But the wolves are actually good on their own, so like I can put the wolves back out and have the kennel masters be gone instead.
God, I hate First Snow Winter. I hate that plot so
much.
Just
wait until Valor comes out.
I hate that plot so much.
I don't mind it so much. It hasn't really affected me too much,
I mean,
and there's ways around it.
That's like the whole reason the Stark deck was tooled the way it was. It was just less vulnerable to it.
Yeah, a lot of people were asking, like, why no Winterfell Kennel Masters? So I was like, Matt needs to answer these questions.
it was purely just because of First Snow Winter. There were games where I would just lose because I had a board full of two drops, and then they're like, First Snow Winter. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I have to discard, like, eight cards now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of factions took that on the chin. I know Night's Watch did.
Yeah.
I think Terra Isle did as well. With their, you know, Arbor Knights, you can't really use the Rose thing on them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, are you going to return three power to your hand? That would suck.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think a lot of, the First Snow, it kind of just, it trimmed down the meta a little too much for my liking.
Sure.
It's like, I appreciate it because you don't want weenie decks ruling the world. That's a problem.
Which is what they were before, like, before we had any sort of real reset. You know, I mean, even with Wildfire, you still got a couple turns with your weenie rush, and it worked out really well.
And so I agree with First Snow Winter. I think it's a good thing to put into the game. Mm-hmm. I just question the way that they implemented it.
Sure.
And I think that it would have been better as two or less strength rather than three two or less cost rather than three or less cost. Just because three cost, that's really that's the meat of your character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the three cost drops. And,
yeah.
You know, you can afford your two cost ambush characters if you're playing Lannister or like things like that. It gets you on that point of being able to drop something.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the most egregious part of the card is that it's after marshalling. So like, if your hand is full of those characters, you can't even play them.
Yeah.
Like you can't even play the ones that are new. Like, you just have to hold on to them. Like, oh, well, I guess I just do nothing this turn. And then, you know, I've got three characters left. Although, the way, like I said, the way the Stark deck is tooled, those three characters on average are probably going to be better than yours. So it didn't mind it so much in most cases.
It's not the case for Night's Watch.
Well, I mean, you know, soon we'll be seeing every house is getting their armies now, their four-cost armies. So, you know, I mean, even though Night's Watch already had theirs, ranging party, well, five costs, that's right.
No, but they're four.
Are they? Okay. So,
it's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. So, I mean,
you know, ranging party, like, I was toying with a long time ago bannering Night's Watch because they had some good cards, and ranging party was like half the reason I wanted to do that because it's an amazing card.
It really is. It really is.
But
and one of the other
we
things
we did, we got Chet this chapter pack, so I think that's really going to solve a lot of problems.
What does Chet do? Is that how important?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't.
Just Chet.
It's Chet. We got Chet. All right. It's going to solve problems. It's going to solve a lot of problems.
Okay.
Just like the Northern Rookery. It's going to solve problems.
I didn't even look at the Northern Rookery.
You draw a card when you play it.
What?
I said you draw a card when you play it.
I mean, I did not have enough.
All it does. It increases your reserve by one.
So, I mean, okay. I didn't have enough locations in the deck already, so I needed a couple more from this chapter pack and everything like that. So, no, but for real, they're terrible.
Until there's a card that says sack a location, gain a goal. I don't know what you're doing.
Or sack a location, gain a power. That'd be nice.
Ooh, that would be nice. You know, get rid of all the reducers that you have in house.
Yeah, I can't use those anyway, right?
But one of the things about introducing First Snow of Winter, going back to it real quick. So, like, it's early in the cycle. Like, right now, we're not thinking about when they're going to start cycling out entire sections of the game, but you know,
that's
a lot
not going to happen for 5 years.
Is it five? I thought it was three.
It's too many.
It follows the same rotation as they decided to do with like Netrunner.
No, I thought that's why they shortened it. It was because.
Well, have they announced that?
To be perfectly honest with you, I've been running off of this 3 years thing since the game was released. So I have no idea. Maybe I just made it up.
I think you made it up.
Okay.
I don't have the energy to check.
6 years might be an exaggeration, but it's at least four or five.
Okay. That seems
because I think Netrunner had been out for 2 or 3 years when they announced they were going to start cycling it, when they're like, but that's not coming for like 2 more years.
Okay.
Netrunner, I do not believe, has cycled any cards out yet.
Well, I mean, the games, I mean.
Well, they haven't cycled cards out. I haven't paid much attention, but I do know that they now have a restricted list.
Yes, like 4 years in, they have a restricted list.
And that's like,
that's not too bad, then.
And I think I've been over this. I know I've been over it with you guys, and I think I've mentioned it once or twice on the podcast. It's like half the reason I stopped playing Netrunner is just the card pool got too large, and they weren't doing anything about it. And it's actually kind of counterintuitive, but the larger a card pool gets, usually the less creative people are.
Sure.
Basically, they just add the better cards to what's already the best deck. Very seldomly do more cards actually end up making a difference unless you remove some of the older cards.
And Magic has a way of dealing with that with different formats, like Standard, Modern, you know, Legendary, or whatever it's called. I'm not a Magic player. But it's and that's a way to keep it fresh. But I don't think LCGs can do that. And the reason I don't think LCGs can do that is because when you're introducing so many cards and cycling through them so fast, one of the things that Magic players have is the economy of the cards.
Yeah.
So you can sell cards, trade cards, trade up for what's relevant, whichever format that you want to do. In an LCG format, we have no value to these cards, like whatsoever, except for, you know, if you don't want to buy core sets, you buy, you know, specific cards to so you can build multiple decks. So, I mean, what is, in your opinion, something that they can do to keep it fresh before the cycling comes through? I mean, there is Melee format, and I'm saying that like alternate game formats.
I just think it has to do with just being very careful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so easy to say, because, you know, the level of testing and everything that's done under these cards, I'm sure, is massive, and there's no real way to predict certain things. But you just have to be very careful when you're releasing cards. And I think First Snow Winter is one of those cards that they might not have been careful enough with.
Okay. Well, I mean, and then that's why at a certain point, I think, and I don't know if I'm in the minority on this, I'm okay with a restricted list. I don't see it as like an emergency Band-Aid. I like deck building restrictions when it comes to games with large card pools. I'm not saying we have a large card pool yet, but, you know, by Worlds this year, I actually wouldn't be opposed to a small restricted list. You know, I don't like erratas because I think that's lazy. You know, write the card right the first time. But with the restricted list, I mean, it's kind of a format in and of itself. You're within the main format, but now you have to really consider do I want this card over this card if they're both on the
restricted
list?
Well, a restricted list allows you to make cards that would work together well, but you can't include them, so it increases deck building opportunities without creating dangerous scenarios.
Combo breaking.
Yeah.
But the real question is, you know, you don't want to do that too early, because then you can create a massive restrictor list and then it creates problems. Because, like, okay, so for instance, with a restrictor list, for those of you who don't know, it's basically, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
You have a list of cards and you can include one of those cards in any deck.
That's correct.
So just since we're talking about it, and I don't necessarily think First Snow Winter needs to be restricted, but if it were, what one card on a restricted list serves no purpose, because you
have
to have
the funniest restricted list ever. It's one card.
So, you know, you'd have to have at least two cards on it, and say those two cards cannot be in the same deck.
Okay.
So with First Snow Winter, if you were to add it to a restricted list, what would be the other card that you add with it? I mean, there's nothing about Lannister that is one card that breaks First Snow of Winter. It's just kind of like the entire thing.
Sure. Well, and there's other decks that use First Snow of Winter to great effect as well.
Yeah.
I think
like First Snow of Winter and March, you could put those on a restricted list.
But March. But then, March is such a standard card.
That's the issue.
That's
the problem.
Yeah.
That's the combo break, but that's the problem, because now you have marched. Now you have March to the Wall on the restricted list. Then if a new card is added to the restricted list that does not interact negatively with March to the Wall, you still can't include both.
There are other things to combo after First Snow of Winter. Naval Superiority. When someone has a handful of characters and they want to play Kingdom Plot to play all of them, you Naval Superiority them. It sucks. It's hit me a few times. I mean, there's other things out there that definitely go into that. We haven't really seen other... I mean, we haven't seen the next cycle at all yet. So in terms of asking what should be on the restricted list as it stands, I don't really know. Until we get through this cycle and the next cycle going into Gen Con, I don't think there is really any way to say what's going to be on the restricted list. As it stands right now, I mean, I think the game's going to be as balanced as it can be. There is going to be one to three. I mean, if you look at it with four tier one houses, that's half the factions right now doing well in tournaments. Honestly, for a game that hasn't even been out a year... That's really good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job with that.
I am obviously a very vocal anti anything that beats Night's Watch. So, you know, my first thought would be to want a restricted list, but I really don't think it's good for the game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair.
I don't think it is either, but if I had a restricted list, Tywin and Tyrion would be on it. Just those two cards.
I think that's everyone's go-to, Tywin and Tyrion.
Sure.
I think that's really the easiest thing to say when talking about restricted lists.
Well, then if you guys want that, I want Balin and Seastone Chair on the restricted list.
See, I could live with that. I could honestly live with that.
You could, because you would just play Baratheon.
No, but... I could still play Gary Joy with that. Honestly, I play like one Seastone Chair sometimes.
Really?
It's good. It's not great.
Yeah, I think a lot of people overrate Seastone Chair a little bit, but
it's good threat.
Yeah, back to just kind of like
targeted kill is targeted kill.
Mm-hmm.
We have another segue if we have time, but
oh, Matt wanted to say something.
Yeah, just the nature of like card pools in general. Like, there's a reason Magic has stayed around so long. It's because they do really good testing, they do good balance, and also the rotation.
Yeah,
like. A lot of card games have come and gone, and a lot of it just basically is like power creep. Like in most games, it's either not fun anymore, people lose interest. I guess I'm narrowing it down a little too much, but like Netrunner, I stopped playing it because the card pool was too large.
Same here.
Like there are two ways to restrict the card pool: either remove cards completely or bring up a list, either a ban list or a restrict list. I don't particularly like a list. I like the way cards cycle. And yes, Game of Thrones and other LCGs don't have the liberty of a secondary market, but I don't care. Like, the cards have no value.
Sure.
So I don't care if I can't play them.
Okay, that's a fair point.
So,
okay.
Like, I would not mind at all if, like, in a year and a half, they're like, all right, guys, the first cycle of cards won't be legal by the end of this year.
Kind of like what they're doing with that. Like what they're doing with Hearthstone.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's like, I mean, 2-year cycles are pretty common amongst every game that has a cycle. It's usually about 2 years. And I think that's fine. Like, 2 years worth of cards is usually a lot of cards still. You still have some good variation. And it also, it limits, like, right now, the cards they can print are limited by the cards they already have.
Sure.
Like, they can't print, like, they printed a second Catelyn. And until old Catlin is no longer playable, new Which Catlin will almost never see play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually, so, when they cycle things out, core set stuff is the
core set.
Yeah.
Core set
and big boxes are never going to be cycled out.
And I understand that, but that's what I mean. Like, if they ever want like a new Tywin, it'll have to be better than current Tywin. And if that's better than current Tywin, it's game breaking.
Or in a different way.
So the way that they do that when they print an alternate of a character generally is that the alternate, like, core set Catlin is amazing. I don't think there's any disagreement of any of us here. The second Catlin is good for when or if Stark sacrifice decks become a thing. You know, that's what she's suited for. And so the alternate's usually going to focus on a specific mechanic that house can utilize.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that will do that. Will we ever see sacking in Stark be a thing? I mean, out of the box, no. With Winterfell Crypts, I actually haven't tried it out yet because I think it was missing Winterfell Crypts.
I actually think Winterfell Crypts is just better in a standard, like in my Stark deck.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it in there, and I think it's better in that than it is in a sacrifice deck.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
Just because, like, with the sacrifice deck, you're just giving up so much. It's in the name. You're sacrificing.
Yes,
like,
it is
and
true.
You're sacrificing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that Winterfell Crypts is going to be able to leverage that enough to make it good. I haven't tested it at all, so I don't really have a whole lot of grounds to be talking on it. But, like, where I only need one use of it in my current Stark deck, like, usually it's like either I have to sacrifice a character for an effect that I do have, like Pact Survivor Brand. Or you do your crackback on your military because I went like pretty heavy in on mine. Like,
sure.
I think just getting the one use of it off of my on your military challenge is fine.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Joe, you wanted to segue into something?
It's passed.
Oh, okay. The moment has passed.
The opportunity.
It's gone.
So yeah, I mean, like as we move forward, so okay, yeah, I guess, you know, no restricted list at the end of the year, that makes sense, and you know the idea of cycling a little faster. And I think, Matt, that's a really good point. If the cards don't have value, who cares? Like,
yeah. I mean, like,
for having no value, it's sometimes ridiculous what people try to sell singles for on eBay.
Oh, God, yeah.
Single neutrals?
Oh. Yeah, like, three cans judgments, $28.
Yeah, well, because that's whatever. They want to make their money off of that one sale.
Well, because the core set, like, faction-specific cards, except for very specific different things, like, are not worth a thing once you buy them.
I mean, well, you know, my goal is to have 6 Baratheon decks built at any given time, all doing slightly different things.
Good luck with that.
But no, it just, it's ridiculous. But I mean, that's all you really want from it. You want Hand's Judgments, maybe Milk of the Poppies, maybe Bodyguards.
Tears of Lys.
Yeah, Tears of Lys, Put to the Sword, stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know. But the 25, it was the last time I looked, it was $25 for a set of 3 Hand's Judgments. And that was a little
bit ridiculous. And that's where the weakness in having no secondary market really takes its tolls. Neutrals are really the only thing that you'd want a secondary market for.
Sure.
But FFG is not interested in doing that.
But could you imagine, you know, like if Tyrion and Tywin were like ultra rares in a booster pack?
Well, I mean, in essence, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, being one of them in the core set. Imagine how expensive a promo of like Hand Judgment would be, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, even if it was like the one where they give away a billion copies, that still would be, I guarantee, even if it was the 16 per set, it would probably still be like a $10 promo.
Yeah, that's what I've never gotten is that promos, sometimes they focus on things you don't need promos of. I would much rather have 6 copies of Hand Judgments than 6 copies of Tombstone Knight.
Or Eddard Stark.
Or that beautiful Varys altart.
Oh. Or that beautiful Eerie altart.
I know, right? Which we finally have the Eerie. Yay!
We
had this altart for like 3 months and we can finally play it, which we're not going to.
No.
But we have the ability to.
I mean, can we get a raise of hand? Is anyone going to be playing the Eerie? I will be just for funsies.
I almost thought about it in Baratheon, just so like, you will not kill my fucking king. Nothing you will do will touch this man.
And they like marched.
I have no interest in playing the Eerie.
Yeah, it's just, when we first saw it, you know, it was just like, what's the point? It's a 4 cost location that
doesn't win you the game.
Doesn't win you the game at all. Yeah, it's a preventative save. Sure. For 4 gold. It doesn't seem worthwhile to me. I've yet to.
If you're paying 4 gold for something, you usually want it to be impactful.
Yes.
You not losing a dude is usually not that impactful. Yeah. Because most of the time, it's your choice anyway.
Exactly.
It's like
you should have chuds out there. You should have ways to.
Now, if it were like an Iron Mines that didn't discard, I think that would be pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, but that like at you know gold. preemptive saves are like you can't kill my Ed. Okay, well then I'll kill your Blackfish. It's like, oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Blackfish is easily one of the MVPs of the Stark box. I have lost so many times to just the Blackfish. And someone was playing a Stark Tyrell. I think it was the store owner here. And that deck was I mean it, when it worked.
It's fast.
Yeah, when it worked, third turn, you lose.
That's the deck I keep pitching to Matt, and he keeps shutting me down.
Oh, really?
He's like, I'm not putting Tyrell into my decks.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like generic good start.
I was like, you play one Sansa's Rose on him, and he's like, he's going, man. He's got his four
he's
power.
Done.
He's done.
He's doing it. He's living the dream.
I mean, I've always said that the ability that he doesn't kneel is just gravy. Like, the fact that he's renowned and has draw card, like card draw, is all you really need.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to be participating for the card draw, which I think is really important.
Oh yeah, it's really.
So it's like he's basically a renown with better insight.
Yes,
exactly. No, that's exactly what it is. It's better insight.
Like, yeah.
And it's a reaction to winning a challenge, right?
So you get it before. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, so it's like, oh, let's hope I draw. Put to the sword. Oh, exactly. I'll put to the sword.
Motherfucker.
I want you to play Stark just so you have that reaction at one point.
I just got to put to the sword. Even if I had to put to the sword in my hand, I would pretend that I drew it just to piss my opponent off.
I just top deck and put to the sword. Yeah, that's definitely sand in the But cool. Well, I think that's about all the time that we have for this week. Thank you everyone for listening. I'd like to thank Arkham House Games, and I'd like to thank Steven at inexistence.org, who does all of our hosting and all of our tech stuff. Anybody else?
Shout outs, Joe.
I'd like to thank,
he's got to think about this.
Bam
bam. Shout outs, Matt.
Nope, I'm good.
As always, I like to end the show with a fun fact or something I like. Since like the Greyjoy banner has been getting a lot more attention since Iron Mine came out, I decided to focus on Greyjoy. And I think like Theon is probably a piece of that with his stealth, right? The Greyjoy block.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just was like looking stuff up, and it's really interesting. When they were casting the original Game of Thrones show, one of the people they considered to play Theon was Justin Timberlake. Yeah, but obviously it didn't go through, but they just felt like the character had a lot in common with Justin Timberlake. You know what I'm talking about?
No, but why don't you tell us, Danny?
A dick in a box.
Oh my god. I knew you were going to make a dick joke. It's such low-picked fruit.
Low-hanging fruit.
Thank you.
You're so good, Joe.
Thank you.
Has anything I've ever done not been just low-hanging fruit, Joe?
That's a good point.
Oh. Danny is a very high-reaching man.
Well, Danny is all about what's easiest.
And any questions, any comments, anything you guys want to hear us cast about, please feel free to leave it to us, message us, leave feedback. Thank you very much.